5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. SpringHill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
It's time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Sleep Science Today, where we teach you about the science behind sleep and hopefully improve your sleep. Today, we're going to be talking about a topic of middle-of-the-night awakenings for those people that think they're sleeping well and then, boom, all of a sudden they're not. We're going to figure out what's going on. Our guest is Dr. Miriam Rubin, and she is all about sleep, and she's going to help us understand this topic. So welcome, Dr. Rubin.
Thank you, Andrew. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, we're lucky to have you. So I'm going to pick your brain on this topic and see if we can't educate everybody about what's going on when they wake up in the middle of the night. So I know that there's a lot of people out there who go to bed and then for whatever reason, they wake up in the middle of the night or they wake up every couple of hours. And they're not quite sure what's going on. Can you help us understand what might be happening?
I can do my best. It's a pretty broad topic, but there's lots of interesting stuff that can certainly help us understand why people are waking up. And if you don't mind, I just want to start by saying that all the opinions I express are solely my own opinion, not anyone else's. And also, I think it's wonderful that you're doing a radio show to help inform people about this very important topic. I do want to say that I wouldn't want anyone to disregard any advice they might get from a medical or a mental health provider based on something I say in here because, right, I'm just a person on a radio show. I haven't personally evaluated anyone. But right. I do think that if someone hears something that seems relevant to them, that they could take that information back to have a good conversation with their healthcare provider.
So. Excellent. No, excellent information because, like I said, we're all about science here and we want people to be doing the best thing for themselves, and that's why we have sleep doctors out there. So if you are running into any particular problems or anything you hear about on the show that you want to know more about, that's when you go and you see a sleep doctor, a specialist, someone who knows what's going on, and they can evaluate your individual situation, because it may sound like you, but it may be different in reality. So thank you for reminding us of that.
Absolutely. So going back to your question about why do we wake at certain times in the night, I thought it might be helpful to kind of give an example. So let's imagine a guy who, you know, an adult male who tends to go to bed around midnight and seems to always find he's waking up around 3 a.m. I think some people can maybe relate to that. Okay. Right? So in order to understand why someone might typically wake up at certain times during the night or after they've been asleep for a certain length of time, it's really helpful to think about that we all sleep in cycles. Okay? So we sleep in cycles that last between 1 and 2 hours. And so we have as many as 4 or 6 cycles per night. And the way I like to describe a sleep cycle is you start out awake. I'm going to do my hand. So like this is waking, right? Mm-hmm. You dive down pretty deep into a deep sleep. And then you come back up again, almost to waking. And this continues. So that's one cycle, right? One dive down and coming back just about to waking. Mm-hmm. And then we continue to the next cycle and so on throughout the night. And that's different from, I think many people imagine that healthy sleep or good sleep is diving down deep and then going deep all through maybe for 8 hours and only coming up at the end of the night. Nobody mm-hmm. does that. Even mammals, by the way, besides humans, sleep in sleep cycles. So wow. each cycle, yeah, it's fascinating. I remember hearing a talk about someone where they compared elephants to tiny animals like, I don't know, mice or tree shrews, and they found that the larger animals higher up on the food chain, perhaps, you know, that's one theory, had longer cycles, and the smaller animals had shorter cycles. Mm-hmm. So as humans, we're just part of that whole spectrum, right? So what that means is that these sleep cycles are hardwired into us, right? They're not something you can kind of get rid of or don't have to have. Not only do they involve moving from lighter to deeper sleep, they also involve moving in and out of what we call REM or rapid eye movement sleep.
Right, right.
Okay. So just a couple other brief things about that is that in the first half of the night, as we're cycling through, we tend to have more deep sleep. And in the second half of the night, we tend to have less deep sleep, but more REM sleep, more dream-related sleep. Okay.
Okay.
So the reason why I like to explain all that, what's this got to do with the guy waking up at 3 a.m.?
Right.
Well, he's more likely to wake up when he's coming up out of each of those cycles and he's very close to waking, right? Huh. At that point, we're in a very light sleep. And that can happen 4 to 6 times per night.
So let me make sure I get this right. How long did you say an average sleep cycle might be?
So on average, about an hour and a half. Because everybody's different. So some people, I think I saw the statistic like 70 minutes, other people as long as almost 2 hours. Mm-hmm. So whenever someone says to me, oh, Dr. Rubin, I seem to wake up every hour and a half, I'm going, sounds like you're waking up when you're in a lighter sleep and you're transitioning from one cycle to the next. So taking this 3 a.m. guy, he goes to sleep at midnight and he's got about a 90-minute cycle. Something's happening after that second cycle. He's coming into a lighter sleep. Maybe at that point he has to go to the bathroom or rearrange his blankets. There are other things that can be going on, of course. But so, the take-home message is that it's normal to wake during the night.
All right, let me make sure I get this straight then from my understanding. So when you talk about the sleep cycle, kind of going down and then coming back up to a lighter cycle, does everybody always go through sort of like this? They go into bed and then they get this first stage of sleep and then they move into the second and they move into the third. And then I guess after that comes REM. And then after REM, what do? They come back to 3, 2, 1 or they pop back to 1 or how does that work?
Well, you know, the graphs that I've seen that are based on, right, the polysomnography, right, the little, I'm pointing to imaginary electrodes attached to my head that are measuring our brain waves. Mm-hmm. They just kind of show us that we go down pretty rapidly, but it's not like totally even all the time. You can spend more time at different stages at different parts of the night.
Okay.
But there does seem to be that down and then up again. And yeah, you can move pretty rapidly at times. Like I know at the beginning of the night, we can move pretty rapidly into a deeper sleep. Mm-hmm. And then later on in the night, we may not get into deep sleep at all. Oh. Right? And then the REM sleep happens, right, for a short period. The REM sleep's a little confusing because it's neither deep nor light. It's what we call, sometimes it's called paradoxical sleep because it resembles both deep and lighter sleep in certain ways.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. So, all right. So we've got this man that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. He goes to bed, probably goes through about 2 sleep cycles, and then he reports waking. So do we know, is there any research out there about does waking typically always happen when they're in that lighter phase, or can people wake in a deeper phase?
Oh, well, that gets into some fun stuff. I like sleep as a topic because it's so complicated, which makes it fun. But we're much easier to waken by other things when we're in a deep sleep. Excuse me, I said that wrong, when we're in a light sleep. Okay. And think about the person who has a baby and they're like, shh, don't wake the baby, and you're tiptoeing and tiptoeing. That baby was probably in that lighter stage sleep that just the slightest noise wakes them. On the other hand, you know, you're tiptoeing around and you drop something like, ugh, I woke the baby, and they're still asleep. They were in that nice deep sleep where it's much harder to awaken the person.
Great.
Okay, so
great.
It does vary depending on where they are in the sleep stage, and that becomes important because there's rarely just one factor that wakes us. There's multiple factors that determine whether we're awake or asleep at any one time, and the sleep stage is really just one of them.
Okay, so what you're describing here is it normal that people would kind of wake sometimes during the night, or is it just people that might have some kind of a sleep problem that would be the ones to wake?
It's always a really good question, and when I was running my sleep group, I would get that question a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is my take-home message to everyone I talk to about this is it is totally normal to have brief wakenings during the night.
Hmm.
Okay? That perfect 8-hour sleep where you conk out and 8 hours later you wake up and there was no waking in between. I don't know. I don't have statistics about how many people can do that, but I would say that's more rare than common, right? Most of us do wake, and it is normal. But here's an interesting thing about waking. When we wake just briefly, we may not remember the waking at all in the morning.
See, that was going to be my question to you.
It's the length of time you wake for that makes the difference. And I did see a statistic about that. Somebody measured that, right? They put people in the lab and they wake them and, you know, see whether they remember waking. And I think the average was something over 4 minutes.
Hmm.
So a person who wakes for 3 minutes and goes back to sleep, ask them in the morning, did you wake up? And they're more likely to say, nope, slept through. They're awake for 5 minutes or more. They might be more likely to say, oh, yeah, I did wake up last night. I remember that. Which kind of gets to the issue, if we wake at night but we don't remember it, is it like we really woke at all?
You know, right.
Out, right? So
yeah. You know, I was going to ask, and I don't know if anybody knows the answer to this question, but if you're describing waking that way where we don't remember it, and let's say someone wakes and they're awake for 1 or 2 minutes only, okay? So they don't remember it in the morning, but during that 1 or 2 minutes that they're awake, maybe they've studied this in sleep studies or something, what are they doing? Are they just laying there still, or do they actually like physically move around? What happens?
Oh, we do all kinds of things, right? I mean, I keep a glass of water next to my bed. I can wake up in the morning and go, yeah, it was full, and now it's this far down. I don't remember waking up and having a sip of water, right?
Huh.
We can rearrange the blankets. We can scratch. We can, you know, do all kinds of things. And that's important to know because, you know, we think of waking and sleeping as these very separate states. And typically they are. We kind of know when we're awake or asleep. But, and that's something I thought we could get into a little bit. There's other stuff that happens where we're partially awake or we're waking briefly and our brains don't really wake up all the way.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps us get back to sleep actually much quicker when our brains don't fully wake up.
Right, right. And that was actually going to be my next question to you was, you know, why is it so hard for some people to get back to sleep after they wake up at night? What's going on there?
Yeah, so that is the kind of the million-dollar question in a lot of ways, because I think one of the things that separates out people who don't have insomnia from people who do isn't whether or not they're waking at night, but how hard it is to get back to sleep once they do wake up,
mm-hmm.
right? The classic, the person with insomnia will often say, oh, when I wake up, I can't get back to sleep.
Right.
Right? So there are, I like to say there are three factors or processes that determine at any one moment how likely we are to either fall asleep if it's the beginning of the night or stay asleep or get back to sleep, mm-hmm. right, during the night. Mm-hmm. And if you understand these three things, that can help you kind of set things up so that when you do wake up, like most of us do at night, you can do whatever you need to do and roll over and get back to sleep, right?
Well, this is a perfect segue since you're about to tell us those three factors. Okay. It's right at the time that I need to take a commercial break. So let me take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about those factors. So hang on.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
All right. Andrew Kolsky here, host of Sleep Science Today. We're speaking with Dr. Miriam Rubin about why we wake in the middle of the night and what to do about it. And just before the break, we were going to get into three factors related to getting back to sleep, I think it was, once we wake up. So sorry to interrupt you, but we had to do some business there.
Absolutely. So we talked last time about, I'm going to call him our 3 a.m. guy. Right, okay. The guy that goes to sleep around midnight, for some reason seems to typically wake up at 3 a.m., doesn't know why. So now we're talking about not just, we know that he's maybe waking because he's between sleep cycles, he's gone into a lighter sleep, but what makes it so hard for him to get back to sleep? Mm-hmm. So one factor is your sleep drive, and I like to call this your appetite for sleep, your hunger or thirst. Because it's a drive just like hunger or thirst. Really simply, the longer you are awake, the stronger your drive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so looking at the 3 a.m. guy, let's say it's a Sunday night and he slept in until noon that morning, had a nice long sleep, and then he goes to bed at midnight. He's only been up for 12 hours. His sleep drive, where would you think? You think it's high or not so great?
Probably not so great.
Not so great. He hasn't been up long enough.
Right.
So maybe he gets to sleep at the beginning of the night, but come 3 a.m., okay, his body, he's all set with sleep. So now he's going to lie awake. Or maybe he was napping during the day. I like to say napping is like snacking. If you think of sleep drive as appetite, you want to be good and hungry, for your big holiday meal, right? Don't have a giant meatball sandwich a couple hours earlier, right? So we say, oh, people understand that. Of course I won't be hungry if I just ate a grinder or whatever, right?
Right.
But they want to be sleepy at 10 o'clock at night, but they were napping in their armchair between 8:30 and 9:30.
Right.
They had a snack. They're not hungry now.
Oh,
so sleep drive is one thing. Hyperarousal is another. Hyperarousal is our fancy therapy way of saying kind of being wired for sound, right? Kind of the opposite of being calm. So when we're, if this is chill and this is normal alertness, this is hyperarousal. Okay.
So really hyped up.
I'm raising my hand here.
Yeah.
But what happens is that the more we're kind of in fight or flight, the harder it is to sleep. So let's say 3 a.m. guy wakes up, looks at the clock, and he goes, oh, well, 3 a.m., sleep cycle, no big deal, rolls over, goes back to sleep. But if he looks at the clock, says, ah, it's 3 a.m. again, oh, I've got this big thing I got to do tomorrow, now I'm not going to think straight, this always happens, why does this happen, I'm so annoyed. Now he's angry, his heart rate's going up, you know, muscle tension's going up. That's going to make it harder to go to sleep. So being worried about getting back to sleep in and of itself makes it harder to get back to sleep. Okay?
Makes sense.
And the third thing, and this is the one that's a little more complicated. We talk about this kind of stuff a lot, or should talk about it, is your circadian rhythm, which is your 24-hour biorhythm that determines at any moment whether you're sleepy or alert. And if you have a really weak circadian rhythm, that can make you be kind of drowsy and, you know, kind of sleepy, not alert all day, and then restless and wakeful at night. So if you're, so that in and of itself can cause more waking. It's sort of like you're not really awake enough during the day, so it's hard to be nice and sleepy at night.
Right, right. Wow. Yeah, I you know, the second factor you were talking about there is one that has always baffled me a little bit because, you know, I talk with people and they say, well, yeah, I woke up in the middle of the night and then I wasn't able to get back to sleep. And, you know, I needed to get sleep because I had this big test tomorrow. And so I said, well, what happened? Well, I was trying to sleep. And I always say, well, what does trying to sleep mean? Because to me, trying to sleep means I'm laying there making myself anxious about the fact that I'm not sleeping so that I can't sleep because now I've made myself anxious. So yeah. I don't know anyone else who can define trying to sleep, but that's my definition.
Well, and I'm going to go back to my eating metaphor because you're raising an excellent point that the difference between our appetite and our sleep drive is that, let's say you just had this huge Thanksgiving dinner. Your appetite is low. You are not hungry, but you're not going to turn down that slice of pumpkin pie, right? At least I'm
not. No way.
Right? Because you can force down that slice of pumpkin pie even though you're not hungry anymore.
Right.
But we can't do the same thing with sleep. We can't force ourselves to go to sleep. Naturally, we can use substances or drugs to kind of try to force sleep, right? But we can't naturally force ourselves to sleep. You have to let sleep come. And so the way to do that is to line up things like your drive, your sleep drive, and bring your hyperarousal down or have it be low, close to bedtime, and then strengthen your circadian rhythm so that sleep will happen naturally.
Right, right. So tell us how to do that. So what do you mean by those things? What can a person do in practical terms to get themselves back to sleep?
Lots of stuff. So this is where I like to point out that melatonin is not just something you buy on a bottle, right? A lot of people say, what's melatonin? Oh, it's those little pills. You can buy those, right?
Right, right.
I got a script for them. Our brain creates melatonin naturally. And the reason I'm bringing it up is it's an intricate or an integral, I think is the correct word, an integral part of our circadian rhythm. It's the hormone our brain creates that brings on that sensation of sleepiness that helps us fall asleep, right? And so there are not just one way. There's actually, I would say, about four different ways to bring on that melatonin, or in the morning, to be more awake and alert. And the first one most people hopefully know is sunlight, or if not sunlight, at least good bright light. Like, I tried to bring light in here because we're in Massachusetts. It's already dark outside.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's already dark. It's not even evening yet. So I'm having lots of light to stay awake so I don't snooze off when I'm talking to you right now. Right?
Right, right.
So exposure to light in the morning helps us get a good circadian rhythm going all day and helps us release melatonin when we want it at night. Social activity wakes us up. Mm-hmm. So we want it in the morning. We don't want it at night when we're close to bedtime. Physical movement and eating. So, for example, say somebody wants to be awake and alert in the morning. If you take your dog for a walk and say hi to a neighbor while you're out walking, you got three of those four, right? Yeah. Sunlight, exercise, socializing. Or right. Maybe you're going to sit down and eat your breakfast next to a sunny window with talk radio on.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Didn't get the exercise, but you got the light, the eating, and right. The socializing, because you're hearing someone. So, for example, I've had clients tell me when I was working with veterans, and they would share with me that the way they had to pull guard duty overnight, really hard to stay awake, probably really, really sleep deprived, sleep drive high. What did they do? They got up and moved around,
mm-hmm.
right? Exercise. Or another example, long-distance truck driver, can't get up and move around, right? Can't have bright light because it's the middle of the night and you got to see the road. Would this dates me. He would use his CB radio. Remember those?
I remember those well.
Right? To talk to another trucker, also long haul, and that back and forth conversation helped them both stay awake.
Right, right.
So if these are the things we want to do to stay awake, then if we want to avoid being awake at night, we want to avoid these same things,
mm-hmm.
right? So, for example, if you wake up at night and you're thirsty, if you have a glass of water by your bed and you don't have to walk all the way down to the kitchen to get it, you're going to be less woken up,
right?
Right.
Right.
Or when I travel, this is what I brought a little show and tell. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So you know how you go to a hotel room and there's always those clock radios next to your bed and most of them are really, really bright?
Yep.
So I have this little silk scarf. It's very flexible and soft, and I just drape it because I want to be able to know what time it is or maybe set an alarm, but I don't want that light in my face.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And it's a nice little light blocker. I also bring a low-level night light, mm-hmm. which I plug in usually in the bathroom because, you know, those hotel lights, they're like, I don't know how many billion watts. You turn that on in the middle of the night, that's going to wake you, really wake you up.
Right, right.
Right?
Wow.
So those are things that I found really helpful when I travel, and I also use this on my alarm clock at home.
Right.
Because it has a light as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I you know, that's one of the things that bugs me is that pretty much every electronic device that exists these days has that little tiny LED light to tell you that power is coming through it or something. But you put that in a dark room, and that little teeny tiny light can light up the whole room, and you can't get, you know, the sleep that you want. So I hate those things.
I'm fond of electrical tape. You know that black?
Yes.
You can block out a lot of those extra lights with some things like that, exactly.
Yes, yes. Well, let me ask you a question about the melatonin that you were talking about there. Sort of going in the reverse. Instead of talking about light in the morning and trying to get yourself going with the circadian rhythm, is there anything to this? You'll hear people talk about, well, you know, have a turkey sandwich because you get the tryptophan from the turkey. That'll help relax and put you to sleep. Is that related to anything that you're talking about?
So that's a really good point. I thought you were going to ask about blue light, which I kind of skipped over because you hear that ad nauseum, right? That we
right.
most of us have heard that in the same way You want to have bright light in the morning to wake up. You want to avoid that kind of bright light, particularly blue light from electronics close to bedtime.
Yep.
What I've heard about, you know, about tryptophan or other digesting food, I mean, I've also heard that, you know, I think cherries contain some substance that helps us fall asleep, but also indigestion can keep us awake. So I don't, I'm not a big advocate of telling anyone to eat any kind of heavy thing. You don't want to go to bed hungry because that will keep you awake.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know that there's any cross interaction between things, substances that foods have. Melatonin is really from the part of our brain that has all everything to do with light.
Mm-hmm.
And in a 24-hour cycle. So it's not just avoiding bright light before bed. You know, if you live somewhere where it's dark until quite late in the morning, or you're in a living situation where you don't get natural sunlight from a window, you might really want to think about buying some full-spectrum lights and turning them on early in the day and just kind of getting your rhythm going.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually one of the cool things out there these days, because I recently was looking to purchase a new light for my kitchen. And a lot of the new lights are LED, except they have settings. You can set them to the bright white with all that blue light, or you can set them down to that cool, you know, yellowish calming light.
Or they call it a warm light setting. I know my phone has that, so I notice it turns more golden, which I think is supposed to reproduce, like, when the sun is low on the horizon, close to sunset, and it's more of a golden light, which maybe our brains go, oh, okay, getting close to bedtime, or at least back when we were without electricity, right?
Right.
We might have gone to bed a lot earlier.
Right.
Yeah, I think those are all good inventions. I think they can help.
Mm-hmm.
But sunlight's still the most powerful one, for sure.
Yeah, I actually did a show. The whole show was about blue light and all, and we talked about how the fact that sunlight is so many, I forget what it was, millions of times brighter than, you know, any light bulb we can have. But this is a point where we need to take our second commercial break, so let's do that. And when we come back, let's talk a little bit about some of the electronics in the bedroom.
Okay.
All right, we'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Michael Rosenbaum. Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We're talking with Dr. Miriam Rubin, and we're talking about waking in the middle of the night and trying to get back to bed. So just before the break, we were talking about blue light and different spectrums of light and how that impacts us. So what about things like electronics in the bedroom? A lot of people can say, well, you know, I have a TV in my room and I like to watch a show. It kind of calms me and relaxes me and then I'm able to go to sleep. What types of things should we be thinking about, pros and cons, as relates to electronics?
Absolutely. And I can just say that in my sleep program, I've had this conversation so many times with people who were like, don't tell me not to have my TV on when I'm sleeping. I love having my, and I relate. I understand that. There's a lot you can say that's positive about it. So if you don't mind, let's go back to 3 a.m. guy. Remember him?
Sure.
The guy who falls asleep in midnight and wakes up at 3 a.m. Well, Let's say he's one of those people who loves having the TV on when he's falling asleep because maybe it distracts his thoughts. He's kind of listening to it, or he finds the light from the screen comforting, you know, in a dark room. He likes to have that. No problem falling asleep. So what's the problem? Well, if you think about it, maybe that first sleep cycle, when he's coming into a lighter sleep, his sleep drive is still pretty high because it's still close to the beginning of the night. And maybe the TV is doing a kind of a quiet episode at that moment. Mm-hmm. So doesn't wake him. Next time he's coming up, now the sleep drive is lower because he's gotten about 3 hours of sleep there. And maybe some really obnoxious commercial just came on where a guy's shouting at you about, I don't know, buying a sofa or something. And mm-hmm. the light is really bright and flickering. Well, that light and that noise might make him move from almost awake but ready to go into that next cycle to, oh, now I'm fully awake.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Okay. So that's the problem. You've got a built-in light and noise waker-upper that, yeah, you'll fall asleep during if your sleep drive is really high, but will also, it's a built-in way of waking ourselves up.
Yeah.
And above and beyond that, they've done research about people who sleep with what they call ambient light, you know, light on around us. And mm-hmm. certainly the bigger your TV is and the closer it is to your bed, can be throwing a lot of, I guess the word is photons, right? The amount of light can be throwing mm-hmm. a lot of photons at us. They found that people who sleep with the light on, that it really does mess with our circadian rhythm. Even though our eyes are closed, our brain is still being, you know, taking in that light. And when it messes with your circadian rhythm, besides making you wakeful at night and sleepy during the day, it impacts things like your metabolism. So they showed one study that showed that it was associated with weight gain, for example.
Wow.
You know, tell people sleeping with your TV on might cause you to have a lot of difficulty losing those extra pounds. Maybe that's a motivator. So we wouldn't think about those things as being connected.
Right.
They've showed that they are.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I'm thinking about the light, and I was just thinking about, you know, I've had the opportunity to do a lot of different traveling. And I went to Alaska at a time of year when it was light outside pretty much around the clock. And it was 9, 10 o'clock in the evening, light just like it was in the middle of the afternoon, and I was not tired at all. But then I can also think of places where I've traveled where, you know, I live in a city where there's always lights and things around me. But then if I travel somewhere where it's out away from the city lights and it gets really, really dark at 5, 6 o'clock in the evening even, I feel like I'm ready to crawl into bed as if it were 11 o'clock.
And some of that might also be a little bit of jet lag if you're traveling a lot, unless you're staying in that place for a few mm-hmm. days. But yeah, the brightness or darkness definitely impacts us. There's no question about that. And so we need to compensate for that.
Right, right. So let me switch to a different question here, because we're talking about waking in the middle of the night. Other than the circadian rhythms and things, I hear that sometimes sleep apnea can have an impact on us.
Right. So that's one of the things that can wake us and we don't know why we woke, right? Some people have sleep apnea symptoms that are really noticeable, like they notice that they wake up gasping for breath.
Uh-huh.
But for many people, all they know is that they are awake, and they don't realize that the sleep apnea. So what sleep apnea is, I know a lot of people maybe heard of it, but it's a sleep-related breathing disorder.
Uh-huh.
Where while asleep, for either, there's two types, there's central and there's obstructive. Uh-huh. And in either case, we temporarily stop breathing. And then as our oxygen drops, because we've stopped, we've paused in our breathing, the brain kind of sends an alert saying, hey, wake up, wake up, wake up. And we wake up just enough to kind of go, and now we're breathing again. And for person can remember that brief waking we don't remember, can fall back asleep, and then the same thing happens. And depending on the severity of your sleep apnea, it can happen many, many times in an hour, right?
Right.
And so all of that waking sleep, wake sleep, wake sleep, keeps us from getting into a deeper sleep, right? And so people with sleep apnea that's untreated, maybe undiagnosed, may know that they think they laid down for 8 hours, they think they slept, but they don't feel rested because of all of those wakings.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like our 3 a.m. guy, they may wake up and not be able to get back to sleep, and they notice this happens to them a lot, like night after night, and they don't know why. And so it, when someone tells me they either feel very fatigued during the day or they're waking a lot and it's not for any obvious reason, I would say, well, let's check some sleep apnea symptoms. Because the old view of sleep apnea, the old view is it's only males who are overweight and of a certain age. You know, we all are more likely to get apnea as we get older, for example.
Yeah.
Or have a large neck size. These are some of the kind of common. But it's not just that. You can also have, so I mentioned the loud snoring, that's the other kind of classic, right? And loud, we mean louder than conversation or loud enough to be heard through a closed door. So uh-huh. Not just, yeah, I snore, but snoring loudly, waking, gasping. Sometimes a bed partner knows, I've had conversations, let's get your bed partner on the phone. Have you ever heard this person stop breathing? Why? Yeah, I pounded him on the chest the other night. I was so scared, right?
Right.
Okay. Then there are other things, too, like hypertension, high blood pressure, or diabetes 2, DM, you know, DM 2, mm-hmm. Waking with dry mouth, waking with headache, teeth grinding, frequently mm-hmm. waking to urinate, difficulty focusing and concentrating during the day. I'm not saying any one of those things means someone has sleep apnea, right? But these things are associated with sleep apnea.
Uh-huh.
So I do a screening, or if people like, they can look up. There's a perfectly good free screening. By the way, can I mention the website? Is that
sure.
Okay?
Absolutely.
So, the American Association of Sleep Medicine, AASM, has a very nice sleep apnea screen. Now, a screening doesn't mean you have something. This is a medical diagnosis. You want to talk to a healthcare provider about formal testing. But if you take the screen and you see a lot of yeses on there, if it were me, I would go and bring that to my primary care provider
uh-huh.
and say, hey, I did this screening. You know, let's take a look at this and
yeah.
see what they would recommend.
Yeah, yeah. And it is interesting. You know, one of the things that I personally learned as I started getting into the sleep medicine area is, just like you say, you know, we typically think of sleep apnea as an overweight male with a thick neck and these things, which can very well be the case. But I was surprised to learn that, you know, women who are not overweight, who don't have any of the characteristics that you normally would think of, can also have sleep apnea. And I just never put the two together.
That's right. And unfortunately, people have sometimes gone without diagnosis because of those stereotypes.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why I say be your own advocate. If you screen yourself and you're seeing a lot of positives, bring that to the attention of the person providing healthcare for you, right? Don't
yeah.
wait for them to figure out that that might be an issue. And it may not be. You can have a positive screen and the test results come back that you don't have sleep apnea, which is good information, right? Because then you know you want to look for some other reason for things like daytime fatigue or frequent waking. There absolutely are many factors, right?
Yeah,
but it's good to be considering some of the more common things.
Right. Well, we have a little over a minute and a half left in our time here, so I did want to ask the question, because we're talking about things that wake you in the middle of the night. What about people who wake up because they have a nightmare? Is there anything they can do about that?
Yes. Absolutely. So a nightmare is, I call that a distressed awakening, right? Okay. When we wake from a nightmare, we're in a state of, remember the old hyperarousal?
Mm-hmm.
Right? People have described a nightmare as like an adrenaline storm in your brain. So you're waking up, your heart is racing, maybe you're in a cold sweat, you're thinking about all these really unpleasant things. You don't want to lie in bed and wait to get back to sleep for two reasons. One is you're very likely to go back into that nightmare, continue mm-hmm. it.
Okay.
The other is you're very likely to just not fall back asleep at all, and you're just lying there unhappy and distressed and awake. So I do have recommendations for people when you wake from a nightmare to ground yourself and distract yourself and bring that hyperarousal down before getting back in bed and trying to sleep again.
Mm-hmm. And for those people who have like a serious problem with nightmares or feel like they're not getting past them, there is treatment available if they see a sleep professional, right?
Yes, there's techniques called cognitive behavioral therapy for nightmares, which are very effective and helping people kind of process, work through their nightmare and recover. There are multiple techniques. That is one of them. It's one of them that I'm trained in and know well. But absolutely. So it's important for people to know that there are treatments out there available for nightmares. They don't just have to suffer with them.
Fantastic. Well, we have reached our time limit for today's show. So, Dr. Rubin, I really appreciate you taking the time to share all of your knowledge with our audience. There's a lot of things where people, you know, are concerned because they wake up in the middle of the night, they don't know what's going on, they're not sure what to do. And the good news is that we know what things are going on in many cases, and there's help for many of those things. It's a matter of getting yourself to a sleep professional so they can help you work through that. This episode, you can see, if you're listening to us on the radio, you can actually see the episode if you go to our YouTube channel at Sleep Science Today. All you have to do is visit our website, sleepsciencetoday.com, sign up for our newsletter list. You can get access to the podcast, to the YouTube channel, all sorts of information, and you can even see my new book out there, which is Why Can't I Sleep Well? 150 questions and answers about sleep with all the science behind it to prove it. So thank you for joining us. We look forward to seeing you on another episode. And thank you, Dr. Rubin.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, sleep science today and sleep better tonight.